There's a counter now. Count to ten or something.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, then I'll hit stop or pause. Okay, hit record. Now it's counting.
Today is Tuesday, January 9th, 2007. We are at the Atlantic Coast Federal Bank on 8th and Center in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Mary Holt Boswell, who was born Mary Holt Johnson. She was born on April 7, 1932 in Pensacola, Florida. My name is Bobby Faust, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Frank Rittinger and Susie Birdsong, who will be operating the recording equipment. Well, Mary Holt, let's start by just talking about where you were when World War II broke out. What do you remember Pearl Harbor Day?
I will never forget. My family and I, meaning my mother and father, and I were in Jacksonville, Florida. Now, in that era, we had little newsboys, young newsboys, on all the city streets over there in corners, plugging their newspapers and shouting it out. Well, we were in Morrison's cafeteria, and the newsboys were never allowed inside. They sold on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the doors opened, and two of them came running in and calling out at the top of their lungs, Pearl Harbor's been bombed.
Wow.
And that's where I was.
What was the reaction of the people in the cafeteria at the time?
We were just literally speechless.
Yeah.
And then the little boys started coming around and selling their papers to individuals.
Now, at the time, you were about 10 years old? 1941, so you were, it was December 41, so you were just about...
1 year less.
Yeah, just about, well, nine and a half. Were you living in Jacksonville, or were you living on Amelia Island at the time?
Oh, we lived here.
Oh, okay.
We
so
came
you,
okay. in about 37 or 8.
Oh, okay. So, after Pearl Harbor, what was happening on the island? I mean, was there a flurry of activity? Were there a lot of volunteers?
Oh, indeed, yes. There were many volunteers of all ages. Things began to happen. We soon acquired, and I'm not sure whether this was done by the Coast Guard or not, but it was a mounted patrol of horses on everything that was beach around the island, that was the sandy type of beach around the island. So that was maybe 12 miles at least and more up around the jetties when the tides were right. And they patrolled all night. We had at least one Coast Guard vessel docked down at the end of Center Street at the docks. We had a station out near Fort Clinch on the Fort Clinch property. And as you go into the fort today and go up on one of the outer bastions, if you looked to your right, like you were looking back toward the jetties and to the east, there was a sort of hidden place there that I think, again, was a Coast Guard radio station. Those were the first things. And then, of course, everyone got involved with activities. My mother volunteered me to go down in the basement of the Methodist Church, and we received gauze for bandages in... I don't know how they came, whether they were it was in rolls or not. But anyway, we took that gauze and we made the prescribed bandages out of it for the necessities of life in war.
Now, you also were a plane spotter during the war.
Yes.
Tell me a little about that. How did you get
fun.
How did you get involved, and were you trained at all?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Okay, tell me about how you got involved and about the training.
It was up at the Main Beach area, as we call it today, directly out Atlantic, and across the parking lot to the north side. The place that we occupied was built up on a stand there. And I would say it was like a room that might be a third the size of this, only square.
So way about up on four by five? Or?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh. Well, even less than
heavens,
that.
Heavens, this is 10 by 12 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about 8 by 10.
Mm, okay.
And it had a walk around outside. And we were up substantially over the ground. You climbed a ladder to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a good view of everything on the beach and almost from one end to the island of the island to the other end if the day was fair. I don't know in miles how far we could see offshore, but we saw a lot. And we had been trained.
Now, was this, who did the training for you? Was it the Coast Guard?
I don't know which agency, but I'm sure that there were people on the other end of my age gap that had been in the service before, and they may have been volunteered. Volunteered, you understand,
mm-hmm,
the ED.
Yes.
To come in and do training. And we had a booklet, and I've looked and looked for it. I've seen it in the last 10 years, but I know not now where. And it gave us all the outlines and the features of the different types of planes, like B-17s and B-25s were two of the most prominent ones around the area then. And we could identify them by shape and by other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we
so did. So they gave you a test after you studied up?
Well, I'm pretty darn sure they did, because I was too young not to
right.
be tested.
Now, how often did you go out on patrol?
Didn't go on patrol.
Oh, no, I
we
meant how old did you go out to your little
sand?
Yes,
I'll
sand
call it.
Dune.
I think I would have gone 8 days a week if I'd been allowed.
Uh-huh.
But probably there were volunteers, and I understand that the women and girls did most of the daytime shifts and that they manned it at night, but this was done by the men,
mm-hmm.
which was obviously a good idea.
Right.
And when we saw something out there, a plane or anything on the horizon or off the beach or around,
uh-huh.
We were to call in and report it. Now, if we saw things going on offshore that we could not understand, we were to call in and report a red flash. And then we would describe to the receiver whatever we had seen.
Did you ever see anything unusual?
Yes, we did, and we nearly died for wanting to know what it had been.
But you didn't know what it was.
We were never told.
Oh, uh-huh. You never saw any enemy planes, though, or anything like that, did you?
Not planes, yeah. But we thought about subs.
Yes.
We did see submarines offshore, and you can't tell. And the contour of the island is such that we are shallow up close to the island,
mm-hmm.
but you get a mile or 2 miles off, and it drops off somewhat, but it's nothing like the Gulf Stream drop-off. And so all the freighters and civilian and other vessels would come in as close as they could to that sort of drop-off place out there and to stay out of the way of the subs.
Oh, wow. What was life like on the island? I mean, assume you just went to school and you went about your business, but were there lots of tensions, rumors flying around during the war that you could remember?
I think, as I remember, for one thing, we had rationing. You know, there mm-hmm. were foodstuffs that were rationed, especially sugar. I love sugar. My family were not big coffee drinkers, and in the neighborhood, we would all take our ration cards, and we would swap them around for the things that our families wanted the most. So our neighbors across the street on the beach side had, they loved coffee. We didn't. So we gave them our coffee coupons, And they gave us their sugar. That's the way people worked. There was a lot of working together. A lot of working together. And everybody on the island was involved.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, your brother went to the war.
I left that book.
Oh.
He wrote a book.
Oh. Well, you can bring it to the museum. And they would love to have it. But
well, they can't keep
it. Okay. Where was he stationed?
He had never flown a plane in his life, and he went to Texas. I think it was near San Antonio, the base, where he trained. And the long come short of it all was that he became a navigator
mm-hmm.
for a B-17.
Oh, wow.
And flew out of England
mm-hmm.
and bombed Germany.
Wow. Now, did he was he able to write letters home very often, or how did
Well, you know, they were the regular V mail, and they would come with pieces chopped out of them because he'd said something that might have identified where he was stationed, mm-hmm. or something of that sort.
Is there anything in particular that you can think of that happened during the war years on the island that you would like to share with us? Any particular story or incident that you can think of that had the neighborhood all shook up? Or
well, not really. I think that people in that time were so drawn to being accommodating and working with one another that the things that you're alluding to happened, but they didn't seem to stand out as
right.
much.
Was, did
if
the,
I
was
can
a
make that understood.
Was the population of the island fairly stable, or was there an influx of...
Well, we had a Coast Guard stationed here. Our airport was not truly what you know it as now, but planes could land there, so that was helpful to the service people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure whether it was mostly Navy or who it was using it. We all worked together. Mother had me folding and doing those bandages down in the basement of the Methodist church. And we just all seemed to be working together. It didn't matter whether you were children or adults.
What was
a lot of women left around here.
Yeah, I know that there were a lot of
because
women.
Because most of the men had gone off mm-hmm. to the service in one way or another.
What was the reaction on the island? Was there any particular celebrations or anything for VE Day? I mean, do you remember when Victory in Europe occurred?
Oh, yes. Everybody's running around hugging everybody else and patting them on the back and, you know, wondering more uh-huh. and more and more about it because you didn't always get details in those days, even at that time.
Were there parades or anything, or did that wait till later?
I think that waited till time for celebrating.
Yeah. When you were living here on the island during the war, were there did you have to black out?
Oh, boy, did we.
Tell us about that.
Every other person was working out of a neighborhood. And we all, in those days, you know, we all had the roll-down window shades,
mm-hmm.
we call them.
Yes, I remember those.
And the exterior side of them was painted black. And we had people in neighborhoods who were appointed to go around and walk the beach, too, at night especially, to be sure that no light was showing.
Hmm.
And if for some reason there was a little crack of light showing through from the outside, somebody was going to come knock on your door and tell you that
oh,
you
wow.
had a problem.
So there wasn't really much nightlife then. I mean, I imagine restaurants
mm-mm.
were closed and theaters.
Oh, heavens no. This island was trying to stay as dark as it could
okay.
so they wouldn't know where we were. That's the truth. I mean, we didn't want enemies or friends to know
uh-huh.
where we were because you didn't know who was what.
That's true. Were there many strangers on the island, or by and large, these were people
well,
you
Well, we
all...
had service people.
Yeah.
And they were taken in. They had to find... This island was not full of rentals. It had not been a resort area at that time. And so people took an extra room or two rooms
mm-hmm.
in a home and converted it into a rental space for the perhaps the wives of some of the service people stationed here so that they could come here and be with their husbands, you know, staying mm-hmm. and renting. So they got together, and they had good times, but, you know, it'd be hard to have a big party with no light showing.
True. What did your father do? I mean, what brought you to Amelia Island?
Well, my father and his brother had a shipyard in Pensacola, and my mm-hmm. father was a native of Pensacola. Mother was from Savannah. She couldn't help it. That's a favorite spot of mine, though. But Dad and his brother sold their shipyard in the height of the Depression because there was nothing they could do. Mother right. used to say that they went down to the shipyard to sit on the dock and help the tide rise and fall. It was that dead mm-hmm. in that era there. And there's a company, I think to this day, Frank, you may know it, Rust Engineering Company. It was a nationwide company, and I think it still exists. But nonetheless, Dad had gotten on with, he come in contact with Rust Engineering. They finally sold the dry dock. And he went to work with Rust, and they were building one of the early paper mills after the war.
Towards the end of the Depression.
And they were building a paper mill outside of Charleston, South Carolina, and my father was fortunate enough to be asked to be their purchasing agent.
I see.
After that was finished in the late 30s, they came down to Fernandina to build Rainier, mm-hmm. the paper mill that we still have, and asked him to come along as the purchasing agent, and then the mill, when it was completed, asked him to stay with them.
Did the war affect the mill in any way in your dad's job? I mean, was there more and more business?
I'm sure it did because the mill was the mill was supplied in many ways by shipping. And the other side of the coin was that the mill shipped its product.
Mm-hmm.
It was white. It looked. Oh, that's do you true. Know what it looked like? Well, it came in big rolls from the mill. It was finished off. It was pine.
I see.
That was the beginning of using all the pine in the southeast to make this pulp, they called it. But it would come off the finishing line as a big roll about 2.5 feet in diameter and about 4 feet high. And it looked like a thick blotter. Paper, white,
mm-hmm.
and it was wrapped around in a roll, and those rolls were taken out and put on a ship to go wherever.
So they would need escort service during the war, I imagine.
I would imagine so, yes.
Kate, does anybody else have any questions, or do you have anything that you wanted to add to this story?
I'm trying so hard to think.
Let's.
Well, I'm guessing
okay.
that...
Well, hold on. We were talking about, while we took our break, we were talking about what life might be immediately after the war. But why don't we start out by talking about when the war broke out. Do you have any idea what the population...
Thank you.
What the population was on the island?
I'm going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that it probably was about... Maybe 3,000. That would be a big guess, I believe, because
that's about what my guess would be.
May I paint you a picture of where people
Please.
Lived? All right. There was the town. You go out 8th Street to what we now call Five Points. Mm-hmm. There was nothing there. Saddler Road going over to the beach from there, paralleling Atlantic up here, was there. The beach extended at Bucks Beach. Excuse me, it was called where Saddler came to Fletcher, mm-hmm. the ocean front, was about a mile and a half long from Saddler Road, Fletcher, the main beach road. And the main beach road did not even run all the way up to the main beach area.
Hmm.
There was a blank area in there of about a half mile to three-quarters of a mile from Saddler Road going north on Fletcher. Then it stopped.
Hmm. So there were very few houses, I imagine, on the
very
beach.
Very few, and almost none on the west side. And we laughed. We bought on the west side because mm-hmm. my parents were coastal people, and they knew what storms could do.
Oh, yes.
And many of the people who came here, either during the war or right after to work with the mills, they didn't understand that always, but we liked a little distance between us and the ocean.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. So the south side of the island, the
south end of the island,
didn't exist.
There was nothing.
Yeah, right.
American Beach was mm-hmm. down there by itself, bless it. There was no bridge off the end of the island,
mm-hmm.
so you had to come back to the existing one here from town mm-hmm.
To the mainland.
What kind of bridge was that?
It was, I can tell you, I remember when we moved here, it was a wood plank bridge that would, I think it would swing
right.
open.
Right.
And it was right beside the present railroad bridge,
mm-hmm.
very close to it. And that was the only way on and off. And the first time we came here, when we moved, I'll never forget, because I was sitting in the back of the car, of course, and you could go across that bridge and all you'd hear is plop, 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 plop from the boards.
Wow.
It was funny. And I still remember it.
There was, I assume, just like one school. There was...
oh, heavens. There
oh,
were
no,
two
no, I
schools.
Guess there had to be two schools because there was one for blacks and one for whites.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There were three schools.
Well, yeah, because there was the... Well, there were four.
St. Joseph's Academy.
Yeah, yep.
And I went to the first 7 grades there, including kindergarten.
And but there was also a black Catholic school, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that would have been
Peter
four schools.
St. Peter Clavis was the church name, mm-hmm. and I can't remember... exactly what the name was of the colored school, we called it, which was right across the street, right across North 5th Street,
right.
behind St. Joseph's Academy to the east of it. And so we had two schools there right together. And my father was Catholic, my mother was an equally devout Episcopalian. And, of course, being Catholic, he... raised us children in the Catholic Church. All right, we had two Catholic churches in the 30s and before and during our time after that. And that one was St. Peter Clavis, the little brick church around the corner, a block away from St. Joseph's Academy and St. Michael's Catholic Church. And we went to St. Michael's, the so-called white church, at 8 o'clock on Sunday mm-hmm. morning. And the next morning, next Sunday morning, they rotated, and we went to 8 o'clock at St. Peter Clavis because my father liked that time frame.
I see. Okay.
So was they came to our church, and we went to theirs.
Okay, so blacks went to one church, and whites?
Basically, but we, for convenience,
yes,
like
right.
my family, we went to both.
I imagine that there was a large Portuguese population that was Catholic here. No?
Not in my day.
Oh, okay.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
And I was going to tell you, I was just remembering, Dad liked to play the organ, and he did play it for St. Michael's Church. And every now and then, the organist over at St. Peter Clavis, the colored church,
mm-hmm.
would be out for some reason, another illness or something. And when we were over there, it was not unusual for somebody to come down from the choir and tap Dad on the shoulder and say, Mr. Johnson, could you play for us this morning? And he always loved to gallop up there and do it.
Great. Any other memories of the town that will paint a picture of what life was like here?
Easy.
Just like today.
Center Street was full of stores and shops, small ones. We had bakeries. We had a meat shop. We had Piggly Wiggly.
Mm-hmm.
Was
mm-hmm.
it Piggly Wiggly? Yes, it was Piggly Wiggly. Down just across the street from North 2nd Street and the Palace Saloon. And diagonally across Center Street from that was the A&P.
Oh, so you had two grocery stores.
So we had two grocery stores. And then coming up Center Street between 4th and 3rd, there was Offer's grocery store, and that was a privately owned store.
Hmm.
So we had three stores in downtown Fernandina.
Wow. Well, of course, that was the town, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. There wasn't much else.
Going back to the war, do you have any remembrance of the German spies that landed at Ponte Vedra and discussion? Because that's why the Coast Guard was here, the patrol. But do you remember any discussion of that or concerns?
Yes, definitely. And I'm sure that it was brought up to the aircraft spotters. And as I said, the boys were on duty, or the men, whomsoever, were on duty at night.
Were they on beach patrol duty during the whole war, the entire war? Do you remember?
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we were not, the aircraft spotters were not patrolling, but they were on duty watching.
Right. But there were beach patrols throughout the war, too.
Yes, that was probably the Coast Guard.
Uh-huh.
I used to get out after Mother and Dad had retired for the night, go across the street, climb up on the highest sand dune beside a house over there, and plonk myself down to watch for the mounted patrol. I would wave at them when they passed by. I don't even know if they knew I was there.
What did they operate out of?
Well, they had two stations, I think, on Sadler Road, about a block before you get to the intersection of Sadler and Fletcher Avenue, and where one of those fast food places is now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all treed. The hammock land, we called it, was dense there. And they had a cleared-off spot a little bit back where there's a housing development now that you enter further west on Sadler. And they had the horses up there. And I think they had some more near to Fort Clinch where that radio station was. So that they didn't have to go the whole length of the island in all probability, but I'm not sure about that.
And basically they just...
I didn't leave my sand dune.
they patrolled the beach area.
Whole beach area. They couldn't, you know, when you get around to certain situations around the jetties and so forth, there's no way they could be going back and forth there because the surface of the beach was not sufficiently strong to support them.
Hmm. Okay, well, go ahead.
Were there any deaths among the Carnivinians? And if so, how did the community react to...
Deaths from what?
The soldiers.
What Susie...
being sent home for burial.
Yeah, what Susie asked is of those who volunteered or were drafted to serve in the war itself.
Oh, sure.
What was the reaction as bodies were sent home from fatalities?
Well, you didn't have a large number of those, and they were received by their churches and their friends and taken care of. I am just so sorry. I forgot to pick up a book that my brother wrote and a picture of him when he was flying overseas.
It must have been an incredible time.
It was. But the goodness came out in everyone. That's what, that was sort of like the sugar on the cake.
Uh-huh.
Everyone worked together. I know I was even, come to think of it, I was even knitting wool squares to have sent away to someone else who put them together for wool blankets, you know, like patchwork blankets.
Was there any change? I mean, because you mentioned your dad sometimes played for the Black Catholic Church also.
Was there
any change in race?
Every other Sunday.
Yeah. Was there any change in the race relations that you noticed during the war?
You know something? I don't think we had the great feelings that were felt elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
because we all went to church together. We all lived together. I mean, and sometimes if we were fortunate, we had someone who was working for us, but if they had a child, she was allowed to bring the child to play with this child. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was quite cooperative. I don't remember hearing about violence between the different races here on the island. And I think part of that goes back to our beginnings, where we were discovered and ultimately occupied by so many different groups of people from different countries around the world, you know, back in the 1500s, mm-hmm. 16s and 17s. And I think that probably had a lot to do with our being able to live together.
So there were intentions, but life was still segregated. I mean, the schools were still segregated.
It was segregated, but we all got along.
And the beaches, yeah, the beaches were still, blacks still couldn't go to the white beaches.
Or is that? No one said they couldn't.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. But it was just not preferred, and I always thought, I was a lifeguard for years, and I've always thought that traditionally the blacks were not comfortable in water. And that may have been because in the previous couple of hundred years they lived on farms and mm-hmm. inland, and water was not a known entity to mm-hmm. them.
But of course America Beach was started as the...
In the 1920s, I think, by Mr.
Uh-huh.
Lewis.
Yes.
And that was a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we want to thank you for sharing these recollections. I mean, you brought Amelia Island to life for us, I think, for the benefit. And so for right now, we will conclude this interview with Mary Holt Boswell, and the museum will look forward to getting some of those pictures and books later on.
I hope I can. Thank you.
Thank you.